This is the PMP Industry Insider Podcast. You're hearing from Cole March and Triangle Pest Control's Donnie Shelton and PCO Bookkeepers, PCO M&A Specialist, and TurfBook's Dan Gordon, as well as some of the biggest players in the pest control and lawn care industries. We're talking about what is changing in the industry and taking you straight to the front lines of what the future holds. If you're ready to grow your pest control or lawn care business, you're in the right place.
Hello, everyone. Welcome out to another episode of PMP Industry Insider Podcast, where we look at what's changing in the industry and we take you to the front lines with those that are driving those changes in those in our industry. My name is Donnie Shelton. I'm with Triangle Pest Control. I also own Comarch, which offers digital marketing and sales services for the home services industry with a specific focus on pest and lawn. And with me, as always, is my partner in crime, Mr. Dan Gordon. Dan, you want to say hi to everyone?
Hello, everyone.
And your business, like more than just hi, Dan. Come on. You got to help me out here.
So, sure. Everybody knows who we are. So, I own PCO Bookkeepers, accounting firm. PCO M&A Specialists, M&A firm, if you're in need of any of those services, we're happy to provide them. And today we're pretty excited to have Andrew Bray.
I want to introduce the topic here. The topic is election aftermath. This is like leftovers, right? Because we've not had enough of the election as it stands. Yes. I mean, I don't know about you, but like when I was driving in my town, there's like 8 billion Trump signs with Biden signs and little, signs that spray painted, signs have been stolen. I mean, it was so much fun. And, I didn't get enough of it. So I figured, why not talk about it even more?
This is like the turkey sandwiches after Thanksgiving. That's
yeah. So, is it better afterwards or is it worse? I don't know.
We're the same. So anyway, with that, we're trying to be pretty topical. So we brought in Andrew Bray. Andrew is an attorney, and I met him several years ago. He worked for NPMA, was their government affairs guy. And now he's with NALP, the National Association of Landscape Professionals. And he does the same type of thing for them. And we're really honored to have you here today. Say hi.
Hey, it's good to be talking to you again, Dan and Donnie, and a lot of my former NPMA members. I'm glad are listening, and also my current NALP members. It's going to be fun to talk about the election or trying to make any sort of sense of this madness. I'm here to do the best I can, but I want a disclaimer with this podcast that things are moving rather rapidly here in DC right now.
Yeah. So at what point will the president? So you got to remember when we record this, it is right now, November the 19th. You might hear this a week from now or 2 weeks from now. So, right now we have a president who's sitting in his office and wondering whether he'll be here 2 months from now. And I guess we could open it up with that. But
he's not conceding. He'll still be there, right? That's what it is, right?
And yeah,
it's rigged and he's not going anywhere. So
right.
Oh, but hold on, let's clarify one thing. I think Dan just said that he's sitting in his office. I do live rather close to his golf course, which he has been frequenting the last 2 weeks, which I don't blame him to get out of the swamp for a couple hours on a day. But at this point he's not conceding. I just wanted to point out he could be playing golf right now as well.
This is true. All right.
How's the traffic there when he plays golf?
It's actually interesting you say that, Dan. I haven't been downtown that frequently recently, but I did go downtown about a week ago to actually give some remarks at Trump's hotel on an issue. And it usually can take up to almost 2 hours, and I got downtown in about 35 minutes. So traffic is nice right now in the DC metro area.
There you go. So there's actually, Trump has a Trump National in here in New Jersey. And prior to him being president, I haven't played the course since then. It's all locked down, but we used to play quite often. And pretty terrific place. And so when he's in town near us, traffic gets a little crazy. But he's put New Jersey on the map. So anyway, So
let's talk about this election.
Yeah, let's talk about what some of the, you know, I guess from an accountant's perspective, I look at taxes. How will they be affected? You know, how did, you know, obviously Trump's probably ultimately going to have to concede. So you've got Biden, and then we've got this Georgia election, Senate election, which could really kind of determine what the future is. And so, you know, I like to look at taxes. Obviously, all of our clients and friends are interested in labor issues, environmental regulations. And so there's a whole host of things that we can we're going to talk about today. So, what are the key issues that the association's working on? How are you guys preparing for this transition or, what's coming?
Sure. So I kind of look at our priority issues. I put them into kind of three buckets. And you kind of talked about labor on one end. I think our other bucket would be kind of environmental issues related to pesticides and fertilizers. And then third, a bucket that we didn't even have until 2020 happened would be, you know, remaining an essential industry and being able to continue to operate under any sort of quarantine scenario. So as we prepare, and I do think you're right, Dan, I think we do need to prepare for a Biden administration. And so right now what's happening, even though there is kind of a holdup on accessing funds for a transition, the Biden administration has already put in place landing teams at all the primary and key agencies of our jurisdiction. So when you think of that Department of Labor, Department of Homeland Security, which came up with the essential industry list, and obviously the most important for a lot of listeners today would be the landing team at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. And actually, right after I get done doing this fun call with you all, or recording this podcast, we are having a meeting with the Pesticide Policy Coalition to discuss how we're going to interact with the agency. We'll obviously do some of our own individual work, but sometimes the voice is stronger together. And if, for those that aren't aware, the Pesticide Policy Coalition is a group of pesticide applicators and registrants. So all the key manufacturers, but then all the users from ag. So think of soy, corn growers association, but also, you know, folks like National Association of Landscape Professionals and, you know, MPMA, Golf Course Superintendents, RISE, Crop Life. So we'll be doing a lot of that deep dive as we're looking to see who we have relationships with, you know, where the political appointees are going to line up and what are going to kind of be the policy initiatives of a Biden administration. And I think first and foremost, they're going to come out of the gates and try to roll back a lot of the Trump era policies that they can roll back immediately. I think luckily for us, I don't think that there's going to be a huge target on pesticides initially. This will be more clean air and coal related stuff. But sooner or later, they are going to move around to things that are happening at OPP and how they're registering pesticides. I also think Waters of the U.S., which has been a hot potato for the last, 6 years, is going to come under increased scrutiny. So we've got our work cut out for us. So I think that's kind of a long-winded answer to your question, and I apologize if I meander. But, you know, the way we're planning it is just it's about cultivating and building those relationships and making sure we articulate our positions to best defend the industry to make sure folks continue to operate in the least burdensome possible and responsible way.
So, Andrew, do you think these are going to be plays where, I mean, I thought, and maybe this is just perception on my part, but I thought Trump was pretty liberal with executive orders, right? He, whenever he didn't get what he wanted, he basically just threw an executive order and said, this is what we're going to do. And some of it got challenged in court, but do you kind of see these labor pesticide, are these going to be things that are going to kind of go through the normal wickets of government? Or is this something where you feel like if Biden takes a position, okay, there's an executive order and now this is going to be the deal. Like how does that work? Or what do you expect?
Yeah, well, I expect from day one, President like Biden to roll back almost all of the executive orders under a Trump administration. Some of those, you know, really good for the industry, such as things that were onerous towards H-2B, which is more on the landscape contractor side, the lawn care. But with regards to EPA, you know, they're going to really have to go through the more formal process to do a lot of this. There is the Congressional Review Act, which is a possibility, but because the Senate is not going to be filibuster proof for President Biden, I don't think the Congressional Review Act is going to come into play as much. So they really are going to go have through the normal rulemaking process, which, you know, I think actually benefits us. We want to make sure we're being heard. I think one of the bigger changes is, you know, how the administration, sorry, I had a little one roam into my room. That's 2020 for us.
That's all right. Yeah.
I do think how the EPA is going to be as willing to work with industry as they have been these past 4 years is going to be an interesting development, because you know, by regulation they are supposed to engage us, but what degree they engage us is kind of going to be something we've really got to watch out. I also think how they're going to do some of their you know, FIFRA basically requires, you know, some risk associated with some benefit analysis, and a Biden administration may scrutinize that benefit a little more, which I think could be harmful for our industry. So those are some things you really got to look out for. I think on the congressional side, though, if you all had other guests on recently, you know, there's a really nasty bill that was introduced this last Congress. It's not going to go anyplace, but it's going to appear again. And it may appear in kind of different forms, maybe via some smaller regulations or some one-off bills. But that's what we really got to keep our eye on, is the NGOs out there, you know, really want to delegitimize how we responsibly use pesticides. And so we got to work cut out for us.
So can you just elaborate a little bit on the nasty bill that got introduced for folks that don't know what you're talking about?
Sure. And this was a bill introduced by retiring Senator Tom Udall and Representative Joe Neguse from Colorado. And the bill, essentially, it was a longer bill, but I want to highlight a few of the really key provisions. One thing it would do is roll back preemption, which is our number one priority. We want to strengthen preemption. There's only about four states that don't have it, and those states, namely Maine and Maryland, have been, you know, thorns in our sides for the last decade. So imagine if every state could start regulating pesticides at the local level. We don't want that. So just to clarify,
some of the listeners, preemption means that you can regulate pesticides and pesticide usage at lower levels than federal.
State and local, not just state, but local as well. Right?
Yeah, like even like municipalities, right? I mean, all the way down. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's preemption. So the bill had preemption in it, correct?
It was going to roll. See, we support statewide preemption. We think it's important for the federal EPA to work with state lead pesticide regulators, and we're okay with that. And that's how it goes in 45, 46 of the states. But there's those that want to roll back and let localities regulate pesticides. So that's you explained it right, Donnie, and that's what we don't want.
But also some of the states are like the California rodenticide and Maryland with Montgomery County. How does the federal government look at that, and are they looking to take on a bigger role or to push it back to the states? How does that all that work?
Yeah. So this goes all the way back to 1991, and well, even further when FIFRA, the most recent iteration, which I believe was 1972, there was this assumption that only states could regulate pesticides, right? And then all of a sudden in 1991, a Supreme Court case in Wisconsin, Mortier versus intervener, I'm getting the name wrong, but it was Wisconsin 1991, and they basically said, hey, look, FIFRA's actually been silent about who has this authority, right? So then all the states went out and put on their books a law that said localities can't regulate pesticides except for a few of these states. So what this bill would do would actually strip that provision out of FIFRA and basically say localities can regulate pesticides, which then takes the authority of the states to take that away. That's what we don't want. We actually tried in the last farm bill to strengthen that language. That was actually when I was still working at NPMA. So we know they basically took what we did or were trying to do and then reversed it on us in this bill. Now, this bill isn't going to move anyplace, not right now, but it's going to come back up in the next Congress. And that's one of the scariest things that we've seen in a while. And not just preemption, though, Donnie and Dan, there's stuff in this bill about kind of trying to, you know, use the precautionary principle to regulate pesticides. And that's the complete opposite of that risk-based benefit analysis I was just talking about. That's very European. That's not the United States. That's not what FIFRA was intended. It would also give the ability for NGOs to petition to basically cancel a pesticide. So you can imagine what they would do immediately with regards to glyphosate or neonicotinoids. It's just some scary stuff. So we've got to be ready for this fight because it's coming, whether it be through, you know, legislation in the 117th or some things that I think the Biden administration may decide to pursue.
So what happens? So if what with the Georgia race, if that comes out blue, what happens with some of the issues that you're talking about? And then what if it comes out red? Will that have an effect on some of the issues you're talking about?
Sure. So if it comes out red, I think we have our Senate firewall, right? I think we can rest a little much easier that a bill that expansive and radical would never get through a Republican-controlled Senate, which I think is good for us. I think the only bad thing about if we do have a Republican-controlled Senate is, I believe, if you watch the way Majority Leader McConnell has operated in the past with President Obama's administration, is that he's going to be rather obstructionist. So I think we could be looking at 2 years of really not much happening, which is, I think, unfortunate on some levels, because whether you like President Biden's policies or not, we want to use these opportunities to get things passed that do help our industry. And I do think a Biden administration has that potential. Now, if we get both seats going dim, and let's be honest here, I can't see a scenario where you get one of the special elections red and one blue. I think if you're going to show up to the poll for a special election, you're probably rather partisan at this point. So we're either going to get a 50-50 split, or we're going to be at 52-48. If we get a Democrat and it's a blue kind of control of all three chambers, that's where I'm getting a little nervous about what might come out. Now, I don't think environmental policy might be the top priority. I also think to watch out, though, Dan and Donnie, because the House got narrower in the Democratic-controlled majority, there's already some infighting beginning, and you can see how there is this inner civil war that's going to erupt, I think, inside of the Democratic caucus. You've got the
Absolutely.
AOC,
I was
very
going to say,
progressive
AOC's on
somebody.
one side of that.
You got the
Yeah,
squad.
man.
The
Yeah,
squad.
man. And the moderates and those that are in these suburban districts, kind of really where I live, Jennifer Wexton is kind of more moderate. And some of the seats are lost. They're blaming the Democratic base, saying we lost because you talked about defunding the police, right? And that scared the hell out of a lot of folks, right? That's not
Sure did.
resonating with vast swaths of the country. But then the AOC side turns around and says, "Hey, look, we are the base. We are the power. We are turning the votes out." But I think the argument could be made they're turning votes out in very strongly held Democratic cities. So I don't think
Right.
turning those votes out is really going to change the electorate. And so I think,
Right.
even with some of these radical things, for Pelosi to do things, she's going to have to get some Republican support, because she's going to siphon off votes of these demographics. And I think that helps us, to be honest with you.
So
And
switching
the
gears on from pesticides to taxes. So one of the things that we were afraid of, and we do this M&A work and whatnot, and we were instructing our clients, if you're looking to sell, get it done before the end of the year, because if Biden, if you get the blue wave, then we're going to get tax increases. But even if it goes blue now, so we've got Biden, if even if it goes blue now, what I'm hearing is that nobody has the appetite for tax increases during this pandemic right now. So are you hearing anything about 2021 and a tax increase for next year, or can we say that that's at least a 2022 deal?
Yeah, I think you're right on that, Dan. I think even in a blue wave, let's look at this like this. A Biden administration is going to have so many priorities to try to get done, and they're going to try to do it all in the first year. Okay, so I'm going to rewind, because I was actually working on the Hill in 2008 when Obama won and we had Democrats control everything. Okay, and I think it's kind of similar because we were dealing with a recession. The first thing they had to do was the American Recovery and Review Act, massive piece of legislation. Okay, the next thing they did was cap and trade. The next thing they did was Dodd-Frank reform, and then finally they got to healthcare. By the time they had gotten to healthcare, all their political capital was done. Okay, so you look right now and think he's going to only have the ability to do three or four things, most likely, even a Democratic controlled. So clearly one's going to be COVID relief, right? Number two, I don't know. I'm probably thinking it's going to be strengthen healthcare, right? Number three, maybe some sort of environmental package, and four is definitely infrastructure. Sorry, infrastructure probably moves up. So you're definitely going to have COVID, infrastructure, healthcare. What's going to be that fourth thing? Because he's not going to get past that, right? I just don't see tax being anywhere remotely on that radar
People just
to
aren't
do
ready
those
for
four.
that. Too many
No.
people are hurting, and you don't want to just raise taxes now. That's kind of where we're at. But you never know. And if I think if Georgia goes red, then that's kind of an insurance policy that it definitely won't have.
Agreed.
So.
So do you, obviously you're working with NAALP lung care members. What kind of questions are you getting from most of your members now? Like what are things that are important to them? What are the issues? I mean, obviously there's a lot of uncertainty with the election. I think in January is when they do the runoff, right? And so once we get through that, we'll have a little bit more stability. Of course, the whole presidential issue should be resolved by then. Once we kind of figure out how this all is landing, like right now, I guess there's really two parts to this question. Number one is, what questions are you getting now? Meaning, like, what's most important to kind of your members now? And then the other one would be, what do you think is really going to shake out? You know, look into your crystal ball there and how this is, how you think this is going to play out, and what the impact that has on both pest control and lawn care industries. That's a big question.
So I think I'll try to tackle it, Donnie, in a couple of forums. But the first thing I continue to get asked, to be honest, and it came up really recently, is because some states are starting to shut down or increase some of their stuff. I'm still getting a lot of stuff like back in March. Hey, should we be prepared that we may be shut down? And I feel rather confident that for our industry, being outside and taking proper precautions, we're going to be just fine, and we're going to be able to continue to operate. So, you know, don't quote me on that, but I feel pretty good about that. I also feel pretty good that the Biden administration is not trying to come in and change that DHS CISA list, you know, that has been referenced so much, even though not every state follows it. I don't think he's going to try to tackle something that could further hinder the economy at this point. So first, that's been the primary question. The next one I get, and this is a little harder to unpack how it's going to roll out, is really one-offs on specific pesticide regulations, namely glyphosate, neonicotinoids, pyrethroids, dicamba. And I think what we have coming down the pipeline is we're going to continue to see not necessarily immediate action at the EPA federal level under Biden, but we're going to see states that we know the same names of these states, four-letter word states, Maryland. Sorry, I have to be able to joke about it. You know, putting forth one-off bills to, you know, further restrict the use of certain classifications. So New Jersey, you know, we're fighting to even use neonicotinoids in the state. I think Maryland and northeastern states are going to fight to possibly even use glyphosate. So I think what we've got coming down the pipeline in the next 6 to 12 months is more of the state level action, and that has me the most concerned.
So the fact that we are an essential services, or we've been deemed an essential service, that's good for now. But what happens if the economy turns south because of COVID, right? Because like right now, as of this recording, today is the first day New York City schools are closed, right? Indefinitely, right? So COVID's coming back, and it's coming back in a big way. And I think that was this morning, 748,000 new job claims for unemployment. What happens if the economy heads south? And our industry in the past has been recession resistant, but do you think that we get through this kind of thing, or what do you think? Where's your head on that?
Yeah, so we kind of did an informal survey this summer of a lot of our members, and lawn care operators were having, you know, the best years, specifically on the residential front. Right. So This is slightly different than 2008 on the opposite, and this is kind of anecdotal what we've talked internally. In 2008, you had the housing crisis, right? So if your portfolio from a lawn care perspective was predominantly residential and less commercial, you took a hit, right? Because homes are going under, foreclosures, everything. This time, we're kind of seeing the exact opposite. Those that are heavily invested in the commercial side of the shop are having a little harder time because people aren't going to offices right now. Or I know one prominent member that had a lot of Marriott contracts. Well, Marriott's not doing so well right now, and that's unfortunate. But residential sales were tremendous. People are at home. They want their grass green. They want their yard looking nice. So, you know, I'm optimistic that because of this increased working from home, that if you have a diverse portfolio and definitely have plenty of residential accounts, that you're going to continue to do well. I'm also optimistic, though, that even though there's radical changes to the way we're going to work moving forward, that even the commercial side is going to pick up. I do think that the economy is strong. And it will rebound in the next, you know, 6 to 12 months, maybe not to some of the record numbers we were hitting a year ago. But I do think that everything will work out.
Well, I think there's a lot more hope and faith now that we've got two vaccines that may not necessarily being distributed yet. But at least I think a lot, because that's always been my concern. I mean, we are on the Triangle Pest side. We're all residential, and we've been very fortunate this year. But I've always had this concern of the macro economy, right? Because if that starts going down, then it doesn't matter
whether
we're all in the same ocean, right? Yep. And we're all going to get hit. So, but being that we have at least some sort of light at the end of the tunnel here, I think that's going to help out a lot and kind of keep the economy floating. And if there's another relief package, who knows, right?
What do you think about liability issues for COVID? So if I have an employee who catches it, or I send one of my technicians into your home and that customer catches it, what are some of the liabilities or some of the issues that are going to come up, and how are we going to deal with
it? Sure, and this is one of our top priority issues that we've been working on the minute this hit, and trying to get language in one of the stimulus packages. And that language is in the Republican proposal and strongly supported by Senate Majority Leader McConnell. What the language that we want and what we're really concerned about is we want standard language that clearly identifies why somebody could or would be liable, right? And so we're not asking for employers to be exempt from wrongdoing. But what happened right now is each state can kind of have their own sort of tort law and what that standard might be for being liable through, usually it's negligence. And we want a very clear standard that you're going to be liable when you knowingly, you know, acted in bad faith, or you were wanton or negligence and reckless. So that's, these sort of standards are what we want. My advice to anybody listening to this now is, as long as you are complying with all state, local, and if they are federal law, about making sure you have proper protocols in place and making sure you're not putting someone deliberately in harm's way, I think you're going to be okay. Some states have already moved forward with enacting some of these clear, bright lines of standards of when you would be liable versus not. But I think it's definitely a concern. And I think every company should make sure that they have very clear policies, you know, detailing this. And if they do run into any problem, or somebody does, you know, get sick, they need to make sure they're notifying folks. But then that's another area, because of HIPAA, you got to be careful about what you say or can't say, because there are privacy concerns. So, you know, I don't envy any of the folks that are on, you know, listening to this right now and having to deal with these. What we're trying to do is get them that information and help them. And I am optimistic that we might get some clear standards, you know, established by the federal government in the next COVID relief package.
So would you say that what we could compare it to, like a workers' comp type thing? In other words, if you have workers' comp and I hurt myself on the job, I can't sue my employer. I you know, got to sue my workers' comp carrier, and that kind of relieves the employer of some of the liability. Would you say it's on par, or is that a good parallel?
I think it's a good parallel when you're talking about transmission inside of your own organization. But the thing with COVID that gets concerning is how the transmission could occur through a customer or through a family member of, you know, an employee, because it kind of becomes this widespread issue of where your liability could pop up. That's why we just want some more clear lines about, you know, what would be the standard, you know, from a, what would be the legal standard for real negligence that could expose yourself to liability.
I know that we, in our M&A deals, you know, we've done several of them, you know, this year, and the legal documents, the asset purchase agreements and the stock purchase agreements now contain 20, 25 pages of language that addresses COVID, and it's a constant back and forth between the lawyers. So you know, is that overkill, or how do you see that? You know, how do you see that correcting itself, if it does correct itself?
Yeah, no contract will ever be the same moving forward, I can tell you that. You know, actually, some of the clauses that I know everybody, or I can tell trade associations or folks that do events, are really all of a change, or what you heard is the force majeure clauses, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, because those that had good force majeure clauses were able to cancel events and get out without liability. Those that didn't cover some of these health emergencies or emergency declared by the WHO, which this was, you know, I have seen new contracts in the last couple months that, like you said, Dan, used to be maybe a paragraph of a force majeure clause is now like a 3-page clause. And, you know, I think if you're trying to protect yourself, you need to be doing this. So in the M&A world, why would you not want to protect yourself from these
things? I think some of the more ridiculous things are your time frame, right? So the incubation period of this virus is 2 to 14 days, right? So after 14 days, you're on your own, right? But some of these contracts are a year out or more, you know, I think that they're not, you know, that they're not considering that 14-day incubation period.
Well, yeah, and that's where it gets confusing too, because then if you go look at the CDC guidance, you know, there's the 14-day, but then there are opportunities to shorten that time if you have X amount of positive, you know, tests with no symptoms. So that's where this actually gets really confusing. We created a document to try to tell everybody, hey, here's what quarantine really means, and here's when you can or can't get out of quarantine, and here's when you actually need to quarantine, because you actually had exposure versus, you know, I heard of a friend that I just talked to that somebody might have it. And that stuff gets pretty tricky. And I don't envy folks, but we, you know, at NALP, if anybody's looking for it, we have created a resource as kind of a guidance map to tell you what to do when X happens and for how long and for Z and for B and A. I mean, we tried to do that for you, but, you know, Dan, I had an M&A contract, you know, doing years out. That sounds kind of ridiculous, but, you know, anything can happen in 2020 is kind of the motto I say at this point.
Sure.
So we have been very much focused kind of at the federal level. I want to transition a little bit to talk a little bit about state and local issues. Anything that you're aware of that kind of at the state or local level, as far as like issues, I know we talked about preeminence and that's not really going anywhere. But what about at state and local? I mean, besides Maryland, which we could have fun with all day long.
And California.
And California. Maybe even New York a little bit. I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, so some state and local issues that you're aware of that you know, lawn care operators need to know about, PMPs, anything there you can think of?
Yeah, I mean, I want to just briefly touch Maryland, but not for long. You know, we know that Montgomery County passed the pesticide ban because they could, and Baltimore actually just passed a ban that was tough. But we did prevail in Prince George's County in October, which is a huge win for the industry. It doesn't mean it's not going to come back. They're going to try again. But we had some really good participation from our members who were even getting their customers involved. So I wanted to touch on that because I think that's going to be important for anybody listening to this. That was one of the most impactful things I saw when we had a member bring two of their customers into a Zoom meeting to talk to council members and say why they think it's important for them to have a healthy lawn. And it was pretty awesome. So I hope we can do more of that. But yeah, it was really great. And you would have thought these folks were agronomists the way they were so articulate about talking about the need for, you know, healthy turf to purify the water and, you know, clean the air and keep the earth cooler. It was pretty impressive. But outside of Maryland, here are the places that I'm worried. And we're actually already conducting some inner association meetings. Colorado, they're going to have some problems. California, Connecticut, Maine, New Hampshire, New York, Massachusetts, probably Minnesota as well. So these are kind of the traditional places that we continue to see real, you know, tough things on the way we use products. So I don't anticipate seeing any of these states slow down. And the majority of those states I just said have what we call Democratic trifectas, meaning they control both chambers and the governor's mansion. And so that makes it that much harder to stop some of these sometimes.
Interesting. So one of the things that we see is every 4 years, everybody gets all involved in politics and everybody's go, go, go. And then the presidential election is over. But what can people do in our industry to stay involved, to make sure that, you know, that they're part of the solution and not, you know, just standing on the sidelines? How would you say that folks could get involved?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think first and foremost, I really hope if you want to be involved, shoot me an email, andrew@landscapeprofessionals.org. We have an advocacy contact network. And what we do is we track every bill every day that could impact the industry. And if it is in your state, if you sign up for the advocacy contact team, we will give you alerts anytime something comes up. And we really need that because, you know, my colleague Bob Mann and I can't travel around to the country, especially not right now during COVID. But in the end, you know, policymakers at the state and local level want to hear from their constituents, not, you know, a federal lobbyist like myself. And like I was giving you the example of a customer, they want to hear from that. So first and foremost, that's the bare minimum. If you really want to go to the next level, though, I really think that our industry needs to do a better job of talking to their customers about why they use the products and why they're so important so that they can be engaged and weaponized in this fight. And then third, for the real go-getters, get involved in your local, you know, communities, whether it be getting on the board of an HOA, all of these smaller, being more involved in your church or community, those sort of engagements lead to the next step. What if we had a bunch of, you know, LCOs that were, you know, on county boards, right? Being able to make these decisions or at least had that access to them. I really think that's what's missing in our industry is the professionalism to shine through for us being more engaged in our communities, to know more people, have more connections, and be able to influence policy from the real ground level. So that's something that I know the NALP wants to spearhead and work on, but it does take, you know, you all, the listeners and those in the industry to kind of take that step.
I couldn't agree more with that. 100% agree with that. We had, we talked about this in our last podcast, but you know, we had a service tax proposed here in North Carolina and it passed. But we, you know, as a pest control industry, we got an exemption and it was very much, I mean, everyone came out. At the time I was the president of the association in North Carolina and we had folks everywhere, you know, contacting, you know, state level senators, and it was, you know, now how long will that last? You know, I don't know. I mean, you know, some industries have it, some don't. For now, we got the exemption. But I very much know the reason that we got it was because a lot of folks reached out. So couldn't agree more with that. So, all right.
I remember that fight, Don.
Yeah. So anything else that you think that would be helpful for our listeners, something that they need to know? I mean, we're getting close to the end here and just kind of maybe some words of wisdom or some things for them to think about. I think the advice to get engaged and get involved is gold. And I think it absolutely is correct.
Absolutely.
Anything else you can think
of? Yeah. Well, I'd like to just, you know, if this is going to be, and I've been trying to close on a few things outside of all the stuff we talked about getting engaged. That's number one. But I think, you know, we're in a really partisan, divisive time right now. And I try to be rather optimistic. So rather you supported President Trump or President-elect, you know, Biden, I think everyone should be really proud of the fact that both Biden and Trump received the first and second, you know, one and two for the most votes ever in our history. Okay, so that right. shows engagement. Yeah. I think people should really feel proud about that and not be disenfranchised whether your person won or lost. Okay, that to me is like number one. The other thing I would just also say.
So we shouldn't go around saying things like, not my president, shouldn't do that, no?
I mean, people can do whatever they want to do. That's the First Amendment. But, you know, I truly do.
Guns and pitchforks.
Please put down the pitchfork.
Yeah.
Well, no, because I know there's a lot of folks in our industry that are very supportive of President Trump, and I get that. But I do think that there's going to be a time that everyone needs to turn the page and come together and work on some of these issues. And we're going to have some wins and losses. I've told everybody a Biden administration is going to present some opportunities and it's going to present some challenges. You know, I didn't highlight this earlier. A great opportunity is a lot of people thought Trump's EPA was corrupt and it was killing us at the state and local level. Well, now we're going to have Biden's EPA, which is robust. And it's a strong fit for process and we can trust our regulators. So there's opportunities there. But the last thing I will say is everyone needs a little bit of patience too. You know, everyone wants to think a pesticide issue is the most important issue, you know, but it might not be for this incoming administration. As you heard me talk about COVID and some of the real big ticket items. So everyone needs to just kind of be a little patient as we work through this. I can assure you we're doing everything we can to create those relationships and defend and promote the industry. So, you know, my message is optimism, hope, patience, and we'll get through this together.
You heard it first here, everyone. Hope and change, as said by Andrew.
Optimism.
And optimism.
In one of the best economic years for our industry.
Yes.
Well, yeah, I will say this: I cannot agree more. It really doesn't matter what side of the politics you're on. At the end of the day, we're all Americans, right? And we all swim in the same sea, and you know, and we all live in the same piece of dirt. So. I couldn't agree more with that message. So, Dan, anything else you can think of that you want to add or anything else you think we need to close out for the closing out the session here? I mean, this has been wonderful, by the way. Andrew,
terrific.
This has been a great talk. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure to be able to talk with you all again. And, Donnie, I love that you brought up the North Carolina tax. That's when I was at NPMA. So it took me down a memory road win. So thank you.
Yes.
Excellent.
Well, I think this has been great. Andrew, again, great to have you on board. It's great to hear. I mean, I think if anything from this podcast, you know, we obviously, you know, sometimes I think the news sensationalizes negativity and I agree with you, right? No matter what the outcome is, it's, you know, as with all change creates opportunity. And so we just
always
have
opportunity.
To see
what it is.
Yep. And so with that, thank you everyone for joining us here on PMP Industry Insiders. And Andrew, again, thanks for coming on board. I hope that, you know, things that we talked about today will motivate you to get engaged at the local level, that you can help our industry move forward and really have others understand how critical both industries are, both lawn and pest, and how, you know, how much it actually helps the environment. And with that, I'm signing off. All right, guys, we'll see you then.
Thanks so much.